Bird Dog's khaki shorts are just like your mother. They'll wrap you up and keep you comfortable no matter where you are. Their zipper pockets will securely hold all your things. They'll fondle you with a love you thought only your mother was capable of. Oh, and don't worry. These shorts won't call you a disappointment. You might even start to love Bird Dogs just as much. If you want to experience motherly love again, hurry to birddogs.com/MLB and buy a pair. They're selling out quickly, but they'll throw in a free Bird Dogs tumbler if you get there on time. That's birddogs.com/MLB.
Life comes with a lot of decisions, and it can be hard to know the right path sometimes. A therapist can help you map out what you really want so you trust yourself to make great choices and feel excited about the future. BetterHelp offers convenient, professional online therapy on your schedule, however you want it, by phone, chat, or video call. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/positive.
It was a lucrative day for a handful of athletes around professional sports, not just the NFL, but also the NBA. And sometimes it causes my jaw to drop open and my eyes to pop out of my head. It is Monopoly money to me, but I'll tell you what, sports are a big business, and I'd rather have the athletes get paid than the owners hoard all the cash themselves. And so I'm thinking of the stack of cash with the wings, that emoji. I usually use it when the money is flying out of my bank account because everything is due or has to be paid for all at once, but that is different connotation on Tuesday in the sports world. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, our hump show, middle show of the work week. Just over 90 minutes from now, your chance to ask Amy anything. So please send your questions to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or to our Facebook page.
Carter goes in motion left to right. Fakes the handoff to Eckler. Herbert rolls to his right, now throws to his left. Has wide open Josh Palmer, caught. Touchdown, Chargers. 50 yards, Herbert.
Being on the West Coast, I was always a big Charger fan. It's such an incredible feeling. It's something I've waited for my entire life.
Hello. Big money in the locker room. Proud of you. And where are we going to dinner? Take me. You can have brisket.
Austin Eckler in a good mood, jovial, celebrating the contract of one Justin Herbert, who was a Chargers fan. Matt Smith has had the chance to call his first 3 years in the NFL, and now he is the league's highest paid in history. It may not last for long, but enjoy it while you got it, Justin Herbert. We are so pleased to welcome Eric Smith, senior writer for the Chargers, as they get set to open training camp. This is the big news. So, Eric, what's your reaction to today's contract for the one who Brandon Staley calls his gangster quarterback?
Yeah, it's a big day for the Chargers. I think a day that we all knew was probably going to happen soon, with training camp here pretty much. I mean, first practice is on Wednesday morning. This was probably it. This is probably the time where the deal was going to get done. I don't think the team or Justin wanted this to linger into camp. Justin is hyper-focused on football. He doesn't like to do a lot of media stuff. And the thought of him getting up there and having to answer more contract questions after he's already kind of done it for the last couple of months, probably not high on his list. And the team, they want the focus to be on football too. You know, camp is here. The season's around the corner. So, all football, all the time. It's a very well-deserved deal for Justin, I'll say that. He is, beloved in the locker room, a great guy, a stellar quarterback, obviously. So just a great day for the Chargers.
What do you think is the significance of the Chargers paying him now?
That's one aspect of it, right? Like, Justin would rather get this done sooner rather than later from that aspect, like the media standpoint. But also, too, there's like the financial aspect of it as well. And I think it's no secret that the price is only going up with quarterbacks. And
right.
We saw that, we've seen it this offseason, right? I mean, Justin's the third quarterback to sign a big deal this offseason. And each one has gotten bigger than the next. And, Joe Burrow is probably on tap and his is probably going to exceed Justin's. And that's just how the game is played right now. But like I said, everyone's just happy to get it done now and kind of turn the page and focus on football.
So then heading into camp, what's the attitude, the atmosphere that you anticipate around the Chargers as they kick off 23?
the first day of camp is always fun, right? A lot of buzz, a lot of energy. And tomorrow morning or Wednesday morning, like, I expect like a packed house for Chargers fans. And when Justin Herbert walks onto the field, like, it's going to be a madhouse. Fans are going to go nuts. And that's just going to be cool to see because fans love him. He's earned this contract with his play on the field. It's just the right move all the way around. And like I said, he can really just focus on football now, and that's important because, you know, Kellen Moore is here as the offensive coordinator, and it's like, okay, let's just dive into this offense, be as good as we can be, and try to take the Chargers, you know, further than they went last year.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Kellen. Definitely want to talk about what could be a metamorphosis in this year number four. Where have you seen the greatest growth in Justin's game since he became the starter for the Chargers?
It's a good question. Like, on the field, he's always been talented, right? Like, he's put up numbers. You know, he obviously won Rookie of the Year. So he's been putting up numbers for 3 years now. I think maybe his national profile is, like, lessened a little bit from last year. It's just because I don't think people realize how hurt he was. Like, he got hurt in week two and really had to, like, play with, like fractured rib cartilage for a couple months. And, I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. And then he, you know, we find out later he had a shoulder injury at the end of the year. It was a pretty gnarly season for him. But even still, like, he still, you know, put up plenty of good numbers and played pretty well. Going into this year, like, expectations are pretty high. And I think he can have his best year yet. One, because he's healthy. One, because Kellen is here. Everything is just kind of lining up, you know, contract, new OC. He looked healthy and good in the spring, so it's just all good vibes.
What does Kellen Moore bring to the table then?
Yeah, based on what we saw in OTAs and minicamp, a pretty explosive offense, and that should appease Chargers fans because, you know, they've been clamoring for like a more vertical passing game pretty much all of last year. I mean, we can all probably agree that the Chargers offense, while good, probably left a little bit to be desired in terms of being a little bit more potent in throwing the ball down the field. And like I said, based on what we saw in the spring, like, Herbert was chucking it down the field to everyone. You know, obviously Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are here. The Chargers drafted a first round receiver in Quentin Johnson. So there are plenty of weapons for him to throw to. And he did that, like, in the spring. It looked great. Like, you know, it was aggressive, explosive. We have to kind of see with the run game because, you know, you can't really judge that when there's no pads on. So we'll get a good look at that soon. But by all indications, as camp gets ready to go, you know, Kellen Moore has done a really good job.
Chargers senior writer Eric Smith with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Highest paid player in NFL history, at least for now. That news dropping on Tuesday about Justin Herbert. And so full speed ahead into training camp. Other than the quarterback and his brand new contract, what would you say are a couple of the top storylines about the team as they kick off this camp and coming off that brutal wild card loss to the Jaguars?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any of us have forgotten that. I mean, you try to use that as motivation, right? Like, each year is a new year, but you certainly can't just forget about how last year ended. In terms of top storylines, you know, the offensive line, it's mostly the same guys. It's just been a little bit of, like, reconfiguration. Obviously, Rashawn Slater is coming back, so getting an all-pro left tackle back is just great for Justin and the offense. You know, Austin Ekeler, he's scored 38 touchdowns in the last 2 years. So, you know, it's been a eventful offseason for him and other running backs across the league. But, you know, he's here. He's committed. He's ready to go. And, you know, the Chargers will obviously lean heavy on him again this year. Defensively and really mostly for the whole team, it's just trying to stay healthy. I mean, that the Chargers were hit hard by injuries last year. You know, Joey Bosa missed most of the year. I mentioned Rashawn at left tackle. It was just a rough year injury-wise. And it just feels like this team has a lot of potential if they can just stay healthy. And you could probably have said that about the Chargers a couple times in their recent history. And on paper, it looks good. But, you know, everyone from Brandon Staley on down will tell you that games aren't won on paper. You got to go win on the field. So it's just about putting the work in right now, trying to get ready for week one and seeing how everything, you know, shakes out.
Austin's been very outspoken about what's happening with running backs in the NFL. He's done interviews and reportedly organized the Zoom call with some of the highest profile and highest paid members of his position. He obviously had a huge year last year, not just on the ground with the 200 plus carries, but also in the air and the number of touchdowns that led the league. So where is he right now in terms of moving forward?
Yeah, he's on the team. I mean, I think all that contract stuff and all that is on the back burner for him and for the Chargers right now. You know, like I said, camp is here. The focus is on the season. It's just kind of go time from that aspect. In terms of Austin, you know, he has every right to go out and seek what he feels like he is worth. It's just tough for all running backs right now. It's not just Austin. Like, all running backs are kind of feeling the pinch of that situation. And it's nothing personal that Austin, I don't think, has against the team or anything like that. He just, you know, those guys want to get paid and they're productive players. It's just sort of how that position has shaken out in recent years. One thing I can say about Austin, though, is that, you know, he's here at camp and he is committed. Like, he is a team guy, and, you know, him having a good year sets the team up for success. But also, as Austin enters the final year of his contract with the Chargers, you know, it would benefit him to play well, you know, as he enters free agency and whether he comes back to the Chargers or not. You know, if he has a down year, that's not going to help him at all. So he's motivated for himself, for the team. And like I said, he should be a focal point again of the Chargers offense.
Eric Smith is with us getting set for Chargers camp with the Herbert contract. But we can, of course, look ahead to the Chargers in 23. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. How healthy is Joey Bosa, or how healthy was he the last time that you saw him or were able to speak to him?
Yeah, it's funny because last year at this time, Joey said it was the best he'd felt in a long time. And then he goes out and unfortunately gets hurt in week three and, you know, had a pretty bad groin injury, misses 3 months, comes back late in the year and says, well, you know, when I said that, it was kind of a tough situation because I had just felt bad for such a long time. So it wasn't even like he was at 100% last year. He had just kind of learned to manage the pain he was in and kind of deal with it. You know, he has, you know, the surgery and comes back from that, you know, comes back late in the year, and then has really had all off season to get fully healthy. And so he said, and I think it was mid-May or so, that this is now the healthiest he's felt in a long time. And he said, he's like, I know I said that last year, but really, like, I'm telling you, now I do feel healthy. And if he is, you know, that's great for the Chargers because they really missed him last year on the field. In the pass rush game, sure, but they really missed him in the run game. When he went out, I mean, the Chargers gave up a bunch of explosive runs, especially to the outside. And his presence was missed, especially because when you trade for Khalil Mack, you have this vision of him and Joey playing together, and that just never really materialized. So there's hope again for that tandem to play well and kind of dominate opposing offenses. But, you know, with Joey, always health is the question, and we'll see if he can stay healthy. If he can, you know, he should be, you know, one of the elite edge rushers again.
You point out that maybe there isn't as much buzz or even fewer expectations for the Chargers going into 23, but they do return most of their starters. How much does that matter as they try to build on making the playoffs last year?
Yeah, continuity has been a big thing and a big theme for the Chargers this year. And they're actually okay with not kind of having that buzz. That was kind of the storyline the last day or two of minicamp in June. A year ago, it was completely different. Like, they were the it team of the offseason, like a bunch of splashy moves. And this year, they were kind of quiet. You know, the only outside guy they brought in was Eric Kendricks, the linebacker who used to play for the Vikings. So in that aspect, it was a much more, like, calm, like, subdued offseason. But all the players they signed last year are coming back, essentially, and young guys are taking a step forward. So they're okay with maybe flying a little bit under the radar compared to what happened last year. The team is still talented. Like, if you look at the roster, they have names and they have talent and they have, you know, the horses to make a deep run. It's just a matter of, like, putting it all together. And that starts in camp. You know, you got to put the work in this week, you know, kind of have that high standard from day one and just kind of see where it takes you.
Thinking about the AFC West, the Super Bowl champs there again. Last year was supposed to be a lot more competitive. Didn't quite turn out that way with the Chiefs at the top. So what's your interpretation going into this year?
It wasn't competitive in the sense that the Chiefs, like, won the division again, but the Chargers were right there with the Chiefs in both games they played, yeah, at Arrowhead and then at SoFi. Both games were only 3-point games, and we talked about Herbert's injury earlier. That was in week two in Kansas City, and if he didn't get hurt, you know, maybe the Chargers pull that out late in the fourth quarter, and then the rest of the season is maybe a different story. You know, obviously the Chiefs are still the team to beat, both in the AFC West, you know, and in the AFC, and even in the NFL. Like, it's not only the Chargers who are trying to chase them down. You know, there's 31 other teams kind of going for that mantle too. You know, and they just got to do it, you know, like, or someone's got to do it, because, you know, the Chiefs are the team that everyone's kind of gunning for right now, you know, rightfully so, with, I think, 7 straight division titles and a couple Super Bowls, and that's the standard, and that's what everyone's trying to match.
I saw on your Twitter, Chargers winning the best Twitter account in the NFL. What does that mean exactly, Eric?
Yeah, we have a great, like, digital and social media team. Like, I'm pretty, you know, fortunate to be a part of it. You know, everyone from the top down has really put a lot of, like, emphasis on that and, like, invested heavy in that. I think it just means that, like, kind of we're at the point now where no matter what we do, it's just funny because that's just what, like, our brand is and what we're known for. And then you have other teams, like, copying that, and they're like, oh, look at us. And it's like, well yeah, because, like, we've already done that. but, yeah, I mean, it's cool. You know, it's a cool little accolade to have. You know, just like I said, just happy to be a part of it.
Social media wars won by the Chargers. Now they're going to take that onto the field now as they get set for training camp in 23. You can find Eric on Twitter at Eric_L_Smith. Chargers senior writer. It's almost like Christmas Eve.
It feels like it. Yeah, today was like the first day of school. All the players coming back, and then, you know, Justin's contract. It was a long day. I'm about ready for bed.
Well, I appreciate a couple of minutes. Thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Okay, anytime, Amy.
It is go time for our writers and reporters and anyone who covers training camp, and I can feel the excitement and the anticipation for them. So good to catch up with Eric. As he says, long day after midnight now in LA, but getting set for the start of what will be a bit of a circus for the Chargers as they give their gangster quarterback the contract before he's actually due for a gangster contract. Money, 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 money. Please don't bother asking me about money and asking me anything, because there's really nothing to tell. We were somehow, oh, it was Davante Adams. We stumbled onto the whole topic of prenuptial agreements on our last show 24 hours ago. And yeah, none of us in radio have any need or experience with them. That's just, it's not really a thing at the sports radio level, if you will.
It's not about the money, baby.
It's definitely not about the money, baby. All right, send your questions. Either our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, our show X. Show X? Is that too much like Shohei? Show X?
Too much X.
He could be Show X Ohtani. And then also on our Facebook page, our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Had some dramatic finishes, diamond drama. So we'll drop a few of those on you coming up next. And then, gosh, we've got Ron Rivera about the Commanders' change in ownership, as well as much more from the National Football League.
The second half of the baseball season is here, and each game means a little bit more. We're talking pennant races and wild card chases, with each pitch bringing us closer to the playoffs. The free Odyssey app lets you listen to live play-by-play of your local team, so no matter what you're up to, you'll never have to miss another game. Download the free Odyssey app today and keep baseball close by all summer long. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. Odyssey.
Dun, dun, dun. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I know I'm a weirdo. On CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Swung on, base hit to right. It's off the glove of Guerrero. The Dodgers are sending Will Smith to the plate to tie the game. Throw to second. Safe at second is Muncy. The Dodgers have tied it up down to their last out in the bottom of the ninth. It's 7-7. 1-1 pitch. This one's hit well. Deep to right center. Back it goes. It is off the top of the wall. Here comes Taylor around third, and the Dodgers win it. The Dodgers win it. A walk-off hit in the bottom of the 10th for James Outman. Once around the park, James. 8-7 Dodgers.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Tim Neverett on Dodgers Radio. Well, they snatched victory from the jaws of defeat because they were down to their last few heartbeats before they scored 4 runs in the ninth on 5 hits. Sure, there were plenty of Dodgers fans still hanging out at Chavez Ravine. Sent 8 men to the plate, so they're able to tie the game in the bottom of the ninth. And then Outman with the walk-off hit. You can hear the excitement behind him on Sportsnet LA.
It was a wild game. We didn't quit. We played until the last out, and we came through with the win.
The compete, the fight of our guys. I've said it many times over. It was a team win. And, you could tell those guys really wanted that game. And to our credit, we didn't quit.
So Dave Roberts, certainly a guy who recognizes that regardless of where the Dodgers are, say in April, May, June, thinking about this season, all 5 pitchers they broke camp with in spring training has spent time on the IL. All 5. They've had various iterations of their starting rotation, not to mention piecing it together with those spot starts. And yet, here they are. Once again, the Dodgers 16 games above 500 and leading the NL West. Jay and I had a conversation earlier in which he said, I just don't understand how they can be good again. Seems like they should be bad or at least mediocre. And the funny thing is, that echoes the sentiments that so many said during the offseason on into spring training, is that a bunch of other teams, including those in the West, had made moves to get better. Meanwhile, the Dodgers had done a whole lot of nothing and had lost Trey Turner to boot. Now, I have no idea what Trey would be doing if he was still in the Dodgers stacked lineup, though the Phillies have plenty of really good hitters themselves. But once the Dodgers find their footing, it's funny because you wouldn't think of the Dodgers as being scrappy. They obviously have some veterans. Freddie Freeman is awesome to watch. Max Muncy, Mookie Betts is a former MVP. Will Smith is getting good hits when he needs to. James Outman's been certainly a guy that you can count on, least in spurts here or there. They also have Chris Taylor, who set a couple of grand slams this year. The Dodgers just have a way of figuring it out and finding victories. And a lot of it has to do with the leadership in the clubhouse and the fact that they do have so many veterans. When we're talking about money flying around, the Dodgers pay peeps. They do. But at the same time, they also impress me because the number of guys that they can put out there on the field or send to the plate on any given night who just have seen so much in the game of baseball. Right now, they're sitting four games up on the Diamondbacks and the Giants in the NL West. Don't even bother to think about the Padres anymore. Just, I can't get over that. The Padres, who spent so much money. I don't know if it's the biggest disappointment or the biggest surprise, but it's certainly in the running. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. A little bit of diamond drama. We enjoy it when there are games that go down to the final outs. And the Orioles, the hottest team in baseball, having won 13 of their last 16, thought they were sitting on another W on Tuesday.
And the pitch. Stott swings, rips it down into the right field corner. It'll roll all the way to the wall. Harper is off to the races, into third. He's being waved home. There will be no relay, and this game is tied on a two-out RBI double by Bryson Stott. 3-3 here in the bottom of the ninth. The righty's pitch. Swinging a ground ball through the left side. It's a base hit, and the Phillies have won it. Alec Boehm walks them off. Three straight hits to close out the game as the Phillies wake up in the ninth to win it 4-3. They mob Alec Boehm out in shallow right field as he has won it, his second walk-off hit of the season.
Scott Fransky on Phillies Radio. Yeah, speaking of late and dramatic comebacks, they have two in the bottom of the ninth against the Orioles, and Baum is able to come up with the walk-off hit. The Phillies desperately need wins right now. And for them, for the Marlins, gosh, the Marlins are a bit of a different story. But both the Phillies and Marlins had had surges, shall we say, about the same time the Atlanta Braves had the afterburners flipped on. The Braves kept going northward. The Phillies and the Marlins eventually stabilized, and then gravity kind of pulled them backwards. The Marlins have lost 9 of 10. The Phillies are trying to figure it out. They're trying to put it together. The offense is scuffled. They're still 11 games back in the NL East. And so it really is about the wild card. And they're going to have to figure it out against top competition like the Orioles. Phillies right now are sitting a half game out of that third wild card spot. But it is fun to see these guys. I think they have great characters on the Phillies. And Jay gives me this piece of audio. Now, it's obviously better if it's video. If you haven't seen the video, it's actually kind of funny. But Alec Boehm, he has the walk-off hit. He's getting interviewed on NBC Sports Philly. Jay, would you like to explain to people what happens in this video / audio?
There's a lot of hitting that he's got left to do this year, and he's going to get hot for sure.
Ouch.
Marsh, it's as if you didn't see him. Not into the wet beef jerky there?
No, not into that. It looked like dirt.
So if you haven't seen the video, it's actually really funny. The Phillies posted it on their Twitter with snack time. And so there is no doubt Alex saw the two who were toting Gatorade, or it looked like water actually, right at him. And so after he gets dumped on, and you hear the water kind of douse the microphone, Brandon Marsh tries to feed him beef jerky.
Eat it!
Baum wants nothing to do with it. Really funny, though, because, well, Marsh is a little bit crazed. He walks over to, so he's got the Gatorade in his hands. He walks over to Baum with the beef jerky package hanging from his mouth. And then after they dump the fluid all over him, he rips open the beef jerky. You hear him say, "Eat it," in the background. And Alec promptly rips it in half and dumps both pieces on the ground. And apparently it looked like dirt, so he wasn't interested.
Rude.
It was kind of rude. I mean, he brought him a snack. He earned his supper there.
Right. He earned him a snack. He brought him some jerky for a little post-game meal, and he threw it on the floor.
In the dirt, actually. Mm. In the dirt. So Taiwan Walker goes two runs or gives up two runs on six hits. A few walks in there, but goes into the sixth, and the offense was able to come through late.
Today wasn't pretty at all, but you know, we got the job done. I was able to get out of it with just the one run, which was huge, and kept the team in there for us to get the win in the ninth.
Having that rally in the ninth inning, hopefully that sparks the offense a little bit, you know, gets some guys going a little bit. But that's a huge win for us tonight against a really good ball club.
Rob Thompson, hoping this provides a bit of a spark and a flame for the Phillies, who, again, plenty of real estate. We're talking about 2 months left to go. We know what they did last year when they dug themselves a rather large hole. So they've got plenty of guys who can put it together, but the offense has been inconsistent at best. That's not the case for the Orioles, though I like the point that Brandon Hyde makes after this loss. They are living on the edge a whole lot.
If we continue to play one-run games, we're going to lose. I mean, you just can't be perfect every night out of the bullpen. We had bases loaded, nobody out early in the game. We had chances to add on, didn't do it. Well-pitched game on both sides. Gibby was really, really good, just that one bad pitch to Harper. But, yeah, we had opportunities early to score, and you can't – you let a team off a hook like that. It's not the recipe for success. And so just tough to win the games we've been winning lately.
Hyde refers to Gibby. I do love baseball nicknames. Gibby is Kyle Gibson, who gave up just a couple of runs on four hits. But the larger point that he makes is 1-for-5 with runners in scoring position, and then 9 guys left on base, including ducks on the pond. So, kind of tough when you're living on the edge like that all the time. And the Orioles have certainly gained a bunch of confidence and experience from these one-run games. And they do have the lead in the AL East. Finally, the Rays were able to secure a win and score, what was it, more than 3 runs? That's kind of been their ceiling is 3 runs. But they are able to get a win. And so they're going to make that tight there in the AL East. So, yeah, Orioles are becoming battle-tested. That's great if you look ahead to the playoffs and what they'll be able to bring to the table. But still, it's tough. If you're not going to win them all if you don't ever have a larger margin than just the one run. All right, send your questions for Ask Amy Anything to our Twitter, After Hours CBS. Also to our Facebook page, we mentioned Jaylen Brown's monster contract earlier in the show. We'll hear some of the details there. It's a super, super, super max. $304 million. I try to say it over and over. It still doesn't make any more sense to me. And scary moment for the family of LeBron James. This one was kind of stunning when I woke up on Tuesday and saw that news.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Well, they still have some work to do here with 5:41 to go. Tatum into the corner for Jaylen Brown against Duncan Robinson. Jaylen, right-hand dribble coming strong, hangs in the air, puts it off the glass and in, muscling it in over Kevin Love as he goes to the ground.
Wow. He hit him with the body.
Well, Jaylen's really answered tonight.
We want Jaylen to be here, and he's a big part of us, and we believe in him, and I'm thankful for him. And, you know, I said this earlier, I'm really thankful for when those guys have success, they come back to work. And when they get beat, they own it, and they come back to work.
Getting you to the good half of your week. It's the Hump Show on After Hours.
The voice of one Brad Stevens answering the question right after the Celtics bowed out of the Eastern Conference Finals. Remember, they were down 0-3 to the Miami Heat. Managed to force a Game 7 in their own building. My best friend of all time since age 13, the one that I will see in Houston in the next couple of days, she and her sons were there because they were gifted tickets as she was celebrating a milestone birthday. She said it was the loudest sporting event that she's ever been to, at least to start, inside the Garden in Boston, because we're from New Hampshire. It was incredible atmosphere. She was sending me videos and photos from inside the Garden. But alas, the Heat squashed that very quickly. And so in the wake of that exit in the Eastern Conference Finals, Brad Stevens not only made a couple of trades that were a bit stunning for Celtics fans, sent Marcus Smart to Memphis in what was a three-team trade that landed KP, Kristaps Porzingis, in Boston to try to extend, well, to try to add length and reach to the defense, as well as try to extend their inside presence offensively. Ends up trading away Grant Williams too. Would he go Houston? Is Grant in Houston? I can't remember. It's not NBA season. Dallas. Ah, it's the right state. Boom. Anyway, two moves that kind of break up this group that had gone to the NBA Finals and the Eastern Conference Finals. Remember, they had a coaching change in there as well. Ultimately, the team is built around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And yes, Brad Stevens, true to his word, after these trades are made and the roster is shuffled a bit, he and the Celtics give Jaylen Brown the richest contract in league history, worth up to nearly $304 million. Yes, you heard me correctly, $304 million. It's for a two-time All-Star. And I am not disparaging Jaylen. I love him. I think he's great. He had career highs in points and field goal percentage this year, though he and the rest of the Celtics really stunk it up in Game 7 against the Miami Heat. But he, larger perspective, is one of the driving forces for the Celtics, along with Jason Tatum. Chris Forsberg, Celtics insider on NBC Sports Boston, kind of giving some insight into this contract and what it means moving forward.
This is a chance for the Celtics, who rolled the dice on Jaylen at number 3 in that 2016 draft, to celebrate a homegrown player. And we can quibble about whether he is worth the largest contract in NBA history. The next highest contract is coming right down the pipeline. Jason Tatum's going to sign it in a year. This is what you pay for superstars in the NBA, and the Celtics should celebrate that there is security moving forward. We think the path is two stars moving forward, and you build the best supporting cast you can around them. Certainly, it gets daunting when you think about the amount of salary commitment. Essentially, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum will be taking up 70% of the salary cap, and now again, you go over, you're trying to avoid certain aprons and certain levels. But it does prevent you from putting elite talent around them, right? Can you still have Malcolm Brogdon, Derek White, Robert Williams, and all these guys around them long-term? Probably not. Something's got to give. And yet you have to start with your star talent. And so for the Celtics, they got Jaylen and Jason. And as these deals kick in, they'll have to just measure, like, who is the best group to move forward with? And maybe that does mean moving on from Jaylen Brown in a couple years. Maybe that means moving on from Kristaps Porzingis before his extension runs out. But for now, everybody is happy and paid and under the hood. And I do think, Giles, you laid it out perfectly. You got to maximize this year. You probably got to maximize next year. And then the show will get crazy in 2 years when we get to decide, like, exactly what they're moving forward.
Chris Forsberg on NBC Sports Boston. So crazier than trading away the third member of the triumvirate in Marcus Smart, and also trading away another guy who is critical in their last 2 years. It nearly trading away Malcolm Brogdon. Remember, that was also a part of the deal. So Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, 70% of the Celtics payroll. Yeah, they're one of the most productive duos in the game. And perspective in terms of bottom line doesn't matter as much in sports because it's really next man up. But those two combined for nearly 57 points per game last year. And that's going back to the 70s in the top five over the course of a full season. It's just crazy to think about a two-time All-Star and the Celtics hitching their wagon to this duo while they are trying to change the pieces around them, but knowing, of course, that they fell short the last 2 years. So maybe gives me some pause, but Brad Stevens is definitely shaking it up elsewhere just around these two. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. By the way, Jalen is a great leader, and not just for the Celtics, but he's the VP of the NBA Players Association. So there's some responsibility on his shoulders as a veteran, a leader and a veteran. Elsewhere in the NBA, or it's not really NBA, but it does affect the NBA family. LeBron James' son, Bronny James, you'd have to be hiding under a rock to not hear anything about this guy now. He was practicing on Monday and suffered cardiac arrest. Thankfully, he is in stable condition, no longer in intensive care, according to a statement that was released by the family. But my goodness, the USC medical staff, the athletic staff, they had to rush to work. They had to rush into action, same as what we saw with DeMar Hamlin. Now, I don't know the extent of the cardiac arrest or if he had to be resuscitated, but there was a medical emergency. That's what the LA Fire Department called it. And paramedics had to go to the Galen Center on the campus of USC. DeMar Hamlin reaching out with a tweet and actually says, I'm here for you guys just like you have been for me for my entire process. So instantly, as you can imagine, DeMar's mind, brain, emotions go back to his cardiac arrest. This is scary for an 18-year-old who's just going into his freshman year in college. He's expected to be a lottery pick whenever he enters the NBA. We know that LeBron has talked about not wanting to retire until he gets to play with his son. This must have been terrifying for the entire family. We just saw them on the stage at the ESPYs. And actually, I had forgotten about this, but it's the second straight year that the Trojans have had a player suffer cardiac arrest. Glad to hear he's doing better and he's in stable condition now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.